Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here. You're listening to Grow Great, the podcast, helping leaders establish and sustain high-performance cultures in their careers, their teams, and their organizations. You're listening to Episode 8, Season 2021. Our guest today, Camille Nehauser. No, that's not how she says it. She says it much, much better than I do. I've got the pronunciation guide that she gave me, but, you know. What can I say? I'm an Okie, living in Texas. She's a French woman, living in Florence. You need to join us. We're going to talk about repassionate your organization. In this conversation, I asked Camille about her languages and how many she speaks. You'll have to get to the end of the conversation to find out her answer. I'll give you a hint. It's way more than I speak. I told her I struggle with my native tongue, which is supposedly English, but I don't always do it so well. Camille is, again, it's Neyhouser. It's a German name. She's from France. She lives in Florence. Yeah, try that on for size. You're listening to a guy born in Ada, Oklahoma, who grew up in Louisiana and now lives in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. So, yeah, my path doesn't seem nearly as fascinating as hers. Here's the pronunciation guide. It's Neyhouser. Yeah, I've practiced it, but I'm sorry. It still looks like Nehauser to me. Camille is the owner and founder of Repassionate Your Organization. She helps organizations revolutionize their vision, employee motivation and engagement, productivity, and income. And she helps leaders build and rebuild their organizations with passion, purpose, and inner power. Prior to funding her own company, Camille had a 14-year career with the most reputable international development not-for-profit organizations. She has a double master's degree in international development, and get this, yeah, she's a big shot smarty pants, professional doctorate in public health and organizational learning and knowledge management. She did her doctoral thesis on building a learning organization by design, not by accident. You're going to love it. We had a perfectly lovely conversation a week or so ago about her work and why she got started in this work and some insights from her work that can propel us forward in our own journey. You will find value because, well, Camille is a high value person. Enjoy. Camille, I'm happy to have made your acquaintance. We were able to have a little bit of a chat a week or so ago, so it's good to have you on the podcast. Repassionate your organization is kind of your thing. So give our audience a little bit of context. You know, tell us how you got into this work and tell us what that work is.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Randy. It's great to be here. So yeah, I'm much like you and the interests that you have. My passion is organizational development. So I'm an organizational development consultant and coach. And what I do is that I help organizations identify the blocks they have in terms of employee motivation and productivity and income generation, income growth. And then together we work on solutions, small or big, depending on what the needs are and the appetite is to work through those blocks and really unleash the potential, to maximize the potential of these organizations. So it's my business is called Repassionate Your Organization, RYO for short, because it's not only about repurposing organizations. It's about helping them reconnect with the initial spark, the initial The initial vision that they had, or maybe sometimes it's also about evolving that vision, but remembering why people came together in the first place to do what they did. And it always starts, as you know, it always starts with a dream and with passion, an organization and business.
And you've got extensive experience, outside the business world. I mean, I know that you spent a decent amount of time with UNICEF. So.
So I worked in the international development sector for 14 years. So big not-for-profit organizations with an international outlook, and also yes, a couple of United Nations agencies, including UNICEF. And what I saw in that sector was, sure, there's a lot of hope, a lot of passion, but it's not always channeled very well, let's say. Often the systems, the processes, the policies, and the culture, most importantly, get in the way of people working it at the in their highest potential. And there's also often gaps in terms of leadership. Leadership and leadership practices. So that makes for people who are just not very happy in what they do. And that's a shame because in an industry like that, really people should be there because they, I mean, people should know that or remember what on a daily basis why they are there. And there shouldn't be anything getting in the way of that.
So 14-year-old you, was this work you wanted to do? I mean, what put you down this path?
I wanted to do this since I was 6 years old, actually. I discovered both the work of UNICEF, actually, and my love for organizations at that age. My mother was a regular donor for UNICEF, and we were receiving these wonderful communication materials that were explaining a little bit what the organization was doing with the money that my mother was donating. And that's when I realized the power of people coming together and doing something that is, yeah, vision or and value oriented. And I could really feel that the strength and the potency of that. And from that age, yes, I decided not necessarily I wanted to work for an organization, but that I wanted one day to work for UNICEF. And then I did my studies in international development, and later on my career, I did work for UNICEF.
Do you find, Camille, because you've got, I can't say that I've got any kind of real extensive international background, and so I'm very aware of the cultural differences. And of course, in a city like where I live in Dallas-Fort Worth, 7.5 million people or so in the whole metro area, and people from all over the world. Cities like ours are very global. But even that, I would suspect there are cultural differences in us and our backgrounds. I mean, here you are, a French woman living in Italy, and a guy born in Oklahoma who's now living in Texas does, I can't possibly relate to that. I'm just curious of the cultural differences as we think about high-performing cultures in organizations. I would suspect, I don't know, so I'm going to ask, as you're trying to help a company elevate their high-performing culture, get to the next level of that, what are the impacts of the actual culture that the people came from? The culture from Spain versus Italy and France, and I know that you've also got experience in Australia.
And throughout my career, I worked with people from pretty much every continent. So I worked with colleagues from Southeast Asia, from various parts of Africa, from the Caribbeans, yes, Australia as well, obviously Europe, American colleagues as well. So, it's like everything in life. It's neither good nor bad.
Right.
It's just a matter of harnessing the strength of that and not playing up the potential difficulties or challenges of people from different cultural backgrounds coming together. And also, I think organizations can do a tremendous amount of job in showing people how different cultures coming together can be greater than the sums of their parts. I have a real passion for cognitive diversity, and there's plenty of research that shows that cognitive diversity is, linked to higher performance, higher engagement, higher productivity, and as a result, higher income generation. And that's because when done well, people with very different outlooks on the world come together and they bounce ideas of each other. And so they help each other see their blind spots. And that's how you solve wicked problems when different people with different backgrounds look at one thing and look at all the facets of it and show each other what these facets are. They show you what you can't see and you show them what they can't see. And obviously, cognitive diversity, it's not only cultural, it's also having diverse genders, diversely gendered teams, age, all the different things that make us humans, the way to build high performing teams, in my opinion, is to have a real diversity there in all the ways possible.
Can you share with us, is there a story that leaps to your mind, an experience, some great success in helping an organization get to the next level, and one that you just got some particular joy out of?
Yes. So when I was living in Australia, I worked for 5 years for an organization that is Australia born and based, but also is international. So has offices in, I believe, 13 countries. And their mandate is to end avoidable blindness. And avoidable blindness is a condition that affects women more than men. A little bit for biological reasons, but not really. Mostly it's cultural and it's economic, so socioeconomic reasons. Women access the services less. And so when I arrived in that organization, I said, so you want to end avoidable blindness, but you don't have a strategy to reach women more. So you're not going to get there. It's mathematical. If you're not addressing or accessing the group that is most in need, it's just not going to happen. And so the organization was really good. They gave me, how do you say in English, carte blanche? You
Yeah.
say that? To do whatever I thought was fit to tackle this problem. And going back to the cognitive diversity element, what we decided to do was to design a workshop model that we then went and piloted initially in Southeast Asia in the Democratic Republic of Laos, and then in Bangladesh, and then in Nepal. And that was a massive, for me, that was a massive lesson in cognitive diversity because when we arrived in Laos, I was there with a consultant who was helping me with the development process and the delivery, Australian. We had been told we were going to have a certain audience. And it was a completely different audience. The people we had in front of us were almost all of them nurses from the countryside in Laos. Many of them didn't speak Lao, let alone English. So we knew we were going to need a translator, but we didn't know we were going to need two translators to translate from the dialect into Lao and from Lao into English. And we were a little bit taken aback, and we told our colleagues who are based in Laos, so what do we do? And the wonderful thing there was that we managed to trust each other enough, them with their cultural understanding of what was going on, and us with our understanding of, gender issues at play, to come up on the spot with a completely different workshop package that just worked wonders. And I could see why it was happening. The light come into the eyes of these nurses. They had never even thought about the fact that there could be things in their everyday life that meant that women and men were not treated the same. And all of a sudden, they realized their own bias and some of the things that they were doing with patients that sometimes were just pushing women away and keeping them blind, effectively. And of course, they didn't do that on purpose. They just didn't know they were doing it. They didn't know what they didn't know. And it was magical. It was just such a transformational moment. And the pilot was successful. And then we went on and did it in three countries in Africa, and then a couple more in Asia, I believe. And then we also did it in Australia with our colleagues from the Indigenous Australian program. So it became very successful, and the percentage of women who were blind, I'm not saying that, solely this work led to that outcome, but the worldwide, the percentage of women who were blind dropped by something between 5% and 7% in the 2.5 years that we implemented all these initiatives. So there was movement.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I would suspect that that's, well, how can that not be rewarding work, right?
It was, yes. Yes, absolutely. There's
But
the immediate reward, and then there's all the things that they come up later that you didn't even think about.
that success, how did that success manifest itself to even accelerate the organization to want to do even more? And in your experience, how do these wins propel us even maybe to new areas that we didn't even think were possible?
Well, we were saying before that, people have blind spots, organizations do too. And sometimes they just don't know what they don't know. And once they see it, they can't unsee it. So I guess it takes someone to say, hey, have you thought about that? But that's not enough. As you work with people and with organizations. It's not enough to just say to people, well, you missed that, or you didn't see that. What is really important in the work we do is to take the organization by the hand and the leadership and say, okay, that's okay. We're going to find a solution together. We're going to get through this. You're not alone in this. We're going to get to the other end. And I think that's what, propels organization further when they realize that they can do more than what they thought they were geared for. Because yes, there's the 4-year strategy, and there's the work plan, and there's this and that, the budget, but at the end of the day, it's a framework. But the picture you paint within that CAD on that framework, that frame can look like a million different things, and it's going to be more or less good
Yeah,
depending.
right. But so on the flip side, we've all had failures, and I know that we live in an Instagram world, right, where everybody wants to put the very best foot forward. But I know for me, and I suspect your career is no different, we've learned some incredibly valuable lessons from defeats. And I'm not asking you to get specific with it, but in general terms, what's a big lesson or some big lessons that you learned in an engagement and it just did not work out. And why? Why didn't it work out?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. In fact, I did a professional doctorate exactly on that topic, how organizations learn or sometimes don't. And
And
I
I
did
know
it
that.
specifically. Yes. And then I did it specifically in the international development sector because I think often it's they don't even think about that. There's a lot of emergency kind of spirits there, putting out fires, and sometimes
Right.
it's actually quite illusional. Sometimes the fire is not really there. It's just the culture again. For me, a big lesson for myself that I learned was when I was actually precisely I had designed this beautiful strategy to make the organization a better learning organization, but I didn't think well enough, or I was too naive, I guess, about my sponsorship within the organization. So who was high up in the organization was going to carry that project. And what happened was that there was a switch at some point. Someone left. Someone was really behind it left. And I didn't think well enough about who is going to take the place of this person who was the sponsor of the project. And that's something that will stay with me forever. Because at the end of the
Did
day,
it
there's
just
no point.
die? Did the project
Sorry.
just die? I mean, what happened?
Yeah. The project, I had the backing of everyone, but at the last minute, the sponsor just flipped. I don't know, got scared, didn't think that it was going to make them look good with the CEO.
Right.
And that just stalled the whole thing. And I was told, well, maybe we'll be ready in 12, 18 months. And I thought, yeah, but we could do it now.
Right.
Why wait when we can do it now? And are we going to do it in 12 to 18 months if we have everything we need right now? We're not doing it. I don't know. And so,
Yeah, the
yeah.
frustrating, and you and I talked in a prior conversation, you can't want it for them more than they want it for themselves. And I've confessed to you that especially early, I was wired to really want to try. And I had to learn from experience. There's not enough try in that to make that succeed. You've talked about, in group learning, and if we look at our lives, and you well know that a lot of my focus is kind of the whole peer advantage. And if we get more intentional and more purposeful about the people that surround us, and I'm talking about us as individuals. But it transcends, and I think it applies to groups and teams and organizations as well. We clearly want the very best people around us. But if get to the individual level, I'm talking about you and me and those people that we've chosen to surround ourselves with because not because we're selfish and we just want to take advantage, but we believe that they can make us be better versions of ourselves. What does that look like in your life? I mean, who are some key people or some key personalities that now that you look back, over a 14 plus year career, they really made a difference for you?
I was lucky that pretty much at every step of my journey, I had a manager who believed in me, and they were I did a few jobs. I traveled a bit around the world. I lived in different places, so I've had a few roles, and I've worked for different organizations too. And pretty much at every point in time, there was someone above me who believed in me and who trusted me, and who gave me a lot of autonomy and freedom to do what I thought was right. And many of them are still friends today, actually. It was not only the work relationship, and I, the people I enjoy working with are just the people I enjoy hanging out with. For me, there's no separation. Usually there are people who are it's a combination of values and of intelligence, of curiosity, and an ability to look at the world in a way that not many people look at the world. And that can be the world of the organization, or the world at large. Often it's both. In the international development sector, it's that aspect is really wonderful. It's people who are very curious about others, about the world, and so I've had people like that. So there was a formal hierarchical, I guess, link. But then I've also had informal mentors at various points in time, coaches, with whom and credit to the organizations, when it was done formally by the organization, they were carefully matching us, the coachee and the coach, and they did I must say, an incredible job, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know about the coach, but
Yeah.
no, I do know. We became friends after the coaching relationship ended. So, I've had mentors who were informal, mentors, and who they and I had areas of passion in common, and great conversations, and we just maintained that. And one of them actually is the senior consultant who I was working with in my last role in Australia, and we're still in touch. And yeah, it's been 3 years now, so
I just think it's remarkable that, all of the high performing people that I speak with, you often hear, okay, she was a self-made woman, he was a self-made man. I haven't met that person yet, by the way. Everybody that I've met, I mean, we've got this long list of people that we owe a debt to. And many of us, and I know you're a kindred spirit, we're trying our very best to pay that forward. And to try to pull other people up. As you go into an organization to try to help them repassionate, or in some cases, maybe even find it for real, for the first time, because, for whatever reason it didn't stick, even if they had it day one, it very quickly eroded. What do you find are some of the major obstacles to making that happen, aside from the fact that I would assume anybody's gonna call somebody like you or me, they have a degree of willingness, or we don't even get the conversation, right? So assuming that they've got that, but now you come in, and where did it go wrong that you've got to get it back on track? I mean, what are some of the roadblocks, along the way that maybe people in our audience can look out for?
I'm going to start with the international development sector, and then I'm going to extrapolate. Often, where these organizations can go a little bit wrong is when there is a founding figure, a strong character, and the organization gets a little bit trapped into that identity. That person is long gone, and the organization has not managed to bring itself to sure have that still at the core. But it's not about the person after at the end of the day, it's about the values. And I think maybe that's where many organizations go wrong is you have to stay in touch with your values, come what may. And I've seen organizations put them on the wall and that's it. Or they're on the internet. But that's not enough. The values really have to be lived every day. They have to be, it's about not only talking the talk, it's about walking the talk. And so I think that's true for any type of organization. What is your purpose? What is your vision? And what are the values that underpin what you want, the work you want to do in the world? And what do you want to change? What is the change you want to make happen? And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer to that. And I think that's it's also not that difficult to come up with something that is really compelling, whatever industry you're in, because as we were saying before, it always starts with someone's dream, someone's vision. And it doesn't need to stay the someone. That's the thing, is it's a dream that is going to be shared, and that's how you attract good people and like-minded people, because they believe in the dream and they want to back you and get behind that. So for me, there's really it's a dance between remembering the past in the form of the values that brought the organization about, and also not be trapped by the past, and constantly looking into the future. So it's like the organization is a giant and having its feet firmly on the ground and planted in the ground, but able to grow and to expand from that very strong place. I don't know if I'm answering your question
Yeah, no,
though.
you are. You are.
So for me, that's one thing. And I personally believe it drives a lot of what's going to happen from that point. But it's also about, for instance, once that's clear, not holding on to people who are not behind that, either because they never were, or because they no longer are, or because they misunderstood what we were doing, or because they want to do something else for whatever reason. I mean, everyone is valuable, of course, but no one is irreplaceable. And so it's also shifting the, and it's also true for investors. It's also true in my sector, international donors. If you're not trying to do the same thing here, well, you'll find other people who are. So it's shifting from the scarcity mentality to mentality of expansion, abundance, and it's the old saying, when one door closes, 10 open. So it's not being afraid of I guess the unknown, and sticking to what you know just because it's what you know.
Yeah. Describe one of the very best leaders. I don't need specifics, but if you want to, that's fine. Describe the characteristics of some of the very best leaders that you've worked with or for.
Well, going back to the vision, someone who has a vision and is able to articulate it in such a way that it's first crystal clear, and two, that is going to inspire people to want to get behind that vision. The right people, again. And then it's also about once these people come, it's trusting them with the details, with the nitty-gritty. So in one of the organizations where I worked, there was someone like that who it was incredible how inspiring it was because of that, because of his ability to articulate that vision and just make us want to run with it. But he was also very good because if we, for instance, I had an idea for, okay, I have a project, I think it could really help us get closer to what we want to achieve here. He would give me some budget. He would not, I mean, of course he would ask questions, but he would be willing to let me take that risk, and run with it and trust me with that. And that was incredibly empowering to work with someone like that. That's when I did my best project, actually. Those workshops that I was describing before, that was with his leadership. And what was amazing was the return on investment, not only in terms of the drop in the rates of women who are blind, but also we were able to diversify our sources of income because we were able to tap into funding from organizations that were focused on women and women's rights. So all of a sudden, the income of the organization increased by 10 million that year. That had never happened before. So someone like that is, of course, they're not obsessing over the money, but they know that risk is worth taking because, yes, big risk, but big reward. And if it doesn't work, well, we'll have learned something along the way. That was also someone who was very learning oriented. He really understood the value of trying, failing, learning, trying again, and not being disheartened by what seemed like a failure, but was just a lesson learned.
Yeah, no, that's great. Okay, I've got to ask the question because I have never lived outside of I've lived in three states here in America. I was born in Oklahoma, mostly grew up in Louisiana, and I've lived the last 30 years in Texas. So the whole international thing, I jokingly tell people I can struggle with English. So I got to ask, how many languages do you speak?
I speak, I would say, two fluently, one confidently, and I'm learning a fourth at the moment.
What are you learning?
Italian.
I just so admire it, and I feel like I just don't have the brain capacity for it. So, yeah, that
I
whole
don't think that's true. It's just a
yeah,
matter of
well, yeah,
opportunity.
that's probably that may be true. But listen, I've enjoyed the conversation. I'm
Likewise.
gonna put appropriate links to the audience. I thank you for being here. I'm gonna encourage any of you in the audience, especially those of you that may be living, and I've got some listeners in Spain and Italy and the UK, and I would encourage you to connect with Camille, especially over at LinkedIn. You can read she's got an impressive background, and I've been so pleased to have made friends with you, and thanks for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you very much for inviting me. It really was a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I enjoyed this very much, so thank you.
I told you'd enjoy it. Please visit the website growgreat.com. Find season 2021, episode 8. I'm going to put links to Camille's LinkedIn page. She is reconnoitering her website, but I encourage you to connect with her at LinkedIn. She's super smart, super perceptive, and I've just found her incredibly pleasant to have conversations with, and she's a person who is absolutely willing to challenge the people that she serves in all of the best ways because, well, she cares. So I'm happy to introduce you to Camille Nehauser. That's how an Okie, Texas guy says it. Grow Great, the podcast, the website is growgreat.com. Again, helping leaders establish and sustain high-performance cultures in their careers, their teams, and their organizations. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for all your time and attention. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.